Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action. Hi, it's Diane Allen, and I'm here today to talk about addiction. Addiction is not what you think it is. I've been working in the field of addiction for many, many years. We're going to say decades, too many decades to count, actually. And what I've noticed is a lot of people, especially visionary leaders, miss the point on what addiction really is. They start using substances like alcohol or other kind of drugs or getting addicted to opiates, any of those things. But it started way before that. And until us as a society and the helper people and everybody, and especially the person suffering, really gets a handle on the truth, things just go haywire. Because just stopping using whatever the substance is the ticket to the movie. It is not the movie. In fact, it's just barely the first step. So when somebody's going around saying, oh, I'm this, I'm that, I haven't used in this long, that's great. But there's more to it than that. There's more to it than the last thing somebody used. So I want to talk about how it builds so that you as a visionary leader or anyone listening really understands there's much more going on with addiction than this popular culture even talks about. So the first thing to understand is that addiction is the effect of a spent cause, meaning things are going on way before the person picks up. In fact, for most people that I've treated over the last several decades, they will say that they were having a lot of pain emotionally, usually, and they found that drug, they got drunk that night, or they did that cocaine, or they did that heroin, and they got relief. Relief from the pain that was either emotional or existential, and then they went searching after that relief. So clearly something was going on before they picked up that first thing. And even the people who say, well, I didn't have that problem. I went out and I was just having fun. In fact, I have a client right now who's really struggling with, I'm just having fun, but yet I'm damaging my relationships with my family, I'm hurting my health, and I'm destroying my business. So is it really fun? No, it's a lie we tell ourselves. So the person who's suffering in this way, I call it suffering even if they don't, they didn't start there. The problem didn't start there. The problem started quite some time before, because people, human beings, mammals, we do certain things to moderate pain in our being in order to help us keep going. Otherwise, no woman would have more than one child, right? That's a really painful experience. But why do people have 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 kids? Because over time, our brain changes the memory. Our brain alters the amount of pain. And so pretty soon, that pain level seems normal when it isn't really normal because you're not in that much pain your whole life. So imagine being a young person, a child, an infant even, and you're living in a dysregulated environment, meaning it's maybe a little chaotic, or parents have a lot of emotions up and down, or things are confusing, and you're trying to make your way through the world, right? So the first thing you do when you're little to try to help yourself deal with the pain of trying to figure out the world is hold your breath. I remember when I was a little kid, my brother even used to, because he was really hyper, he would go, I'm gonna hold my breath till I die. And he would squinch and he would go to hold his breath. And of course he didn't die. And all the adults would kind of giggle that that was goofy. But what he was really doing was he was screaming out for help, that he was in so much emotional pain. And he had all these things going on that he was trying to get help for. He was trying to get somebody to understand him. And his only way to handle it when no one was understanding him was to do what? Check out. Now, that is a really big, long conversation. But the point being that we hold our breath in the beginning to learn how to moderate pain. We're told that when we get vaccinations or shots or any kind of painful procedure, hold your breath because it will moderate the pain. That's how our human physiology works. So I can tell when I'm working with somebody, or even when I'm not, if they're breathing from the top of their chest up here or they're holding their breath a lot, That tells me that on a cellular level, often not conscious, that person has a lot of pain that their system is systemically moderating. Whether it's known to them or unknown to them, conscious or unconscious, the biology of that being has pain it's dealing with. So now you're growing up a little bit and things are still dysregulated and chaotic, which as most people have that kind of life, then what happens? We start playing around with our food. Food is the next real big addiction, which is why eating disorders have way more issues and struggles sometimes than substance abuse disorders because of how core it is. Like, we need food just one step more, less than we need air. So if somebody's addicted to a food and they learn how to use food to moderate their pain, then that is also taking care of it. So breathing didn't work. Now we're gonna try food. That's when the 3-year-old or the 4-year-old throws their food across the room or won't eat a certain thing. And then you see it later on in adults where, especially women, will starve themselves, anorexia, right? Or they'll get anorexia or bulimia, or just compulsive overeating. So when I sit with somebody and I have a meal with them and they're shoveling in their food, that tells me that there's some kind of pain in there. There's a hole in there somewhere that they're trying to fill up. Sometimes they'll say, well, we didn't get enough food when we were growing up. There were a ton of kids. If you didn't eat fast, you were done. Well, that's a pain level. Because my definition of pain is this: separation from our source. So all pain is separation from our source. It's not judging another person. It's not judging the person experiencing it. It's not about that. It's about realizing that when I am separated from my authentic alignment in my source, I am experiencing pain. Now the word healing means I'm rejoined with my source, with my way, with my alignment. So I can tell in myself, if my pain level is high, like I'm feeling emotionally sensitive, or I've just done a really intense session with somebody and my emotions are high with them, I can tell. I can say, ooh, I wanna eat this, or I wanna have that comfort food, or I notice I might wanna eat a little faster. So because I'm skilled at this, I'll sit back and take a few breaths and let my system relax, and then I will eat so that I don't feed the compulsion to medicate pain, mine or someone else's, because I'm an empath, with food. So that's the second thing. So first a person's holding their breath, then they start using food. So this is a really big deal, because if somebody's abusing food in any way, and compulsive overeating is that, and we can see it in this culture everywhere, that means that person is dealing with pain existentially, emotionally, mentally, physically, whether they're aware of it or not, because sometimes it's intergenerational, or whether they admit it or not. And if you also look at that person, they're hardly breathing. They're just breathing enough out of the top of their chest to sustain life. Crazy, huh? But that's the way it is. I watch it all the time. So now our child's growing up and we're a little older. We're usually in the adolescent stage by the time we figure this out. And the next thing we do to that we become addicted to, if you will, that sets us up to be an addict later, is we control our environment using our sexuality. And that's a very interesting thing. It's not about sleeping around. I'm not talking about all that. I'm talking about using how I am as a woman or a man and using that in order to kind of control my environment and take care of things. So sometimes you'll see guys, I'm only 4'11", so I have men sometimes who'll come up and they'll go to shake my hand and they'll try to crush my hand. Well, I'm really strong, so it's hard to crush me, but they'll try it. That's using the sexuality of being male to try to control or intimidate somebody else, consciously or unconsciously. That means that person has some kind of pain about who they are as a man or a woman. So if you're a woman and you secretly don't like being female, and there's a lot of women who don't, then you're going to do things to kind of medicate that pain that will set you up to create even more addiction, because you're already not breathing very well. You're probably doing something weird with your food, even not letting it touch or only eating certain things, a lot of control around food. And then you control it with sexuality. So promiscuity does it. People who dress like, either older women who dress like they're teenagers, or the other way around, people who wear really big saggy clothes so that nobody can see what they really look like. There's all kinds of ways people can use their sexuality to medicate pain. I've run many rehabs over the years, and I've worked with a lot of people in new recovery, and one of the first things they do is go try to hook up with somebody else. Why? Because the thrill of the sexual connection, whether they actually do anything sexual more than holding hands, because holding hands is considered sexual in this way, or anything like that, gives them a distraction, a relief from the pain they're trying to heal. So if you're one of those people who just put down your drugs and alcohol, or you just put down the things that were harming you, the next step is all the pain that you've been keeping at bay could start showing up. So you know that it was the right thing to put it down because you're feeling pain. Well, if you're gonna go distract yourself or medicate yourself with somebody else, then you're just adding to the stack of addiction, because we can watch it go down. So that person's also doing stuff with their food, and they're also not breathing properly. So there's all kinds of steps, right? Then after the sexual pain actually comes drugs and alcohol of whatever type, whether the person started drinking and or they did marijuana or they found bigger drugs sooner, and then all these other drugs start up. And so when somebody's doing the drugs that the society calls, oh, you're an addict, you have to stop, that person has been really dealing with trying to figure out how to handle their inner pain for quite some time to get there. They didn't just land in that place, which is why when I see people trying to help somebody who is suffering with addiction from just a cognitive mental standpoint, like, oh, go find a spiritual life, without really showing them how to do it or teaching them, or worse yet, the helper people who are out there who are not, don't have compassion, because that person's suffering. Now, that doesn't mean no boundaries, because those of you who know me know I have a velvet sledgehammer and I really have compassion and I love the people I work with, but I will set really clear boundaries, because that's the only way the person will live through this, because addiction's a deadly disease and it'll kill you. It will kill you even if you're not high or drunk, because if you're overeating, you're undereating, or you're abusing food in some way, or you're out there doing things, controlling your environment with your sexuality, or worse yet, you hold your breath over a chronic period of time, you will end up with some kind of problem in your body. It needs oxygen, so it doesn't want to work very well. So if you're somebody out there, or you know somebody who especially is sensitive or gifted or visionary, they're even more prone to this stepping of hierarchy of addiction. And another part of addiction in this setting is the addiction to things like anger or fear or pride. We can be addicted to a neurochemistry, a way of being, as much or more as we can with heroin. So if you were a child and every time you were coming home from school, you didn't know what mom and dad were up to, so you got nervous coming home. Or maybe you're a woman who your husband was really angry all the time and you really didn't know what you were walking into the door to. They don't even have to be abusing you. It can just be unsteady. Then pretty soon your system gets indoctrinated and addicted to the flow of every time I go home, I get anxious. It gets anchored in there. And it becomes an addictive pattern for the chemistry. So then later on in your life, you have a happy home and you're really happy and everything's great. And you go, huh, I wonder why I always get anxious when I'm on my way home. I wonder why I don't want to be home. Well, it's because it takes time to heal and to work through the chemistry of the biology that was anchored in many years before. So as you can see, there's lots of levels and there's so many things to consider. So whenever I'm listening to somebody or mentoring somebody, especially if they're gifted and they're a visionary person and they're sensitive, is to really understand there's so much more going on than just what the person's using or not using. Typically, there's two ways people handle things. One is hyper-emotional, like everything's a big emotion, like, wow, living it out there. I can tell right away what's going on because they're out there. The other way people will handle it is to detach and be so dissociated that they look like a stone statue, their face doesn't move much. Either way, the person who's acting it out or the person who's turned within, both of them are suffering equally. Just because somebody might look flat doesn't mean they're not hurting. And just because somebody might be out here smiling and laughing and being the life of the party doesn't mean that that's not a coping skill to help their pain. So really being able to deeply listen is one of my great superpowers, and I'm really grateful for it because a lot of the people have told me that I'm one of the first people that really ever listened to them, like with my heart, right? So if you're one of those people I'm talking to, or you know somebody, here's a few tips to help you get started to undoing this sequence of events. Most people try to think through it and work with not doing the substance, of which I say yes. And if you really want good benefit, you need to start learning to have awareness. And the first awareness is of your breath. If you're not sucking air, you're not sustaining your life properly, and any of the other work you're gonna do will fall a little bit short. So doing breathing exercises every day pays off, right? Learning how to breathe well, using all different kinds of skills. So a breath that you would do to help yourself really start breathing again would be to sit up and have your back kind of straight. And your breath starts with an exhale, not an inhale. So if I tell a room full of people, take a breath, and everybody inhales, that shows me that mentally the pain level is moderating, and no one ever taught them that our breath starts with an exhale. So we exhale first, and then we pause and we inhale. And then we pause and we exhale. And then we pause and we inhale. And we keep on going. And we learn how to let oxygen fuel our body. Now, if you do that for 5 minutes or so, you might feel lightheaded. I've had a lot of people go, "Oh, I'm lightheaded now." Well, that confirms for me that they weren't breathing enough oxygen into their being to help it heal. And if you're not breathing enough oxygen into your system, you are getting yourself into a position and into a place where our oxygen level gets depleted in our body and our pain level stays squashed. And what we want to do is let oxygen fully oxygenate all of our being and allow whatever pain is being held in the muscles and cells to emerge and come out and go away like a bubble in boiling water, like a balloon just flitting away, right? It's not to be held on to. So in our culture, we learn if somebody hurts our feelings or we're hurt somehow to hold on. Actually, the healthy answer is to let it go. To let things go in a way that works for you, in a way that serves you. And the first way is with our breathing. So we exhale first, and then we inhale. And then we exhale. And then we inhale. And it's so beautiful because when we just pause a little bit and we let it happen, it resets our nervous system. It allows us permission to just feel. Now remember, your feelings are the energy source that tell you you're alive. You want to have your feelings. In our society, so many times people say, "I don't want to feel anything," and then numb themselves out. Well, that's like being the walking dead, and that's not our goal. If you're a living human being, our feelings are the energy source that tell us we're alive and everything is wonderful and we are sucking air. So I always say air is my friend. So I tell you, air is your friend. So breathe. Another thing you can do, along with your awareness of your breath and stopping whatever the substance is, that's the key problem, is to begin to really pay attention to how you're fueling your body. One is to make sure you're really hydrated. A lot of people don't drink enough water. And I know there's been times in my life where I'm thinking, I'm drinking a ton of water. And when I start counting how much I'm really drinking, it wasn't as much as I thought it was. And even I, every one of us, are gonna have great days and we're gonna have days that aren't so great. No matter what, you're okay. So track your water. You wanna drink enough water to keep yourself fully hydrated. And a good way to think of that is think about how much you weigh and drink half that in ounces of water every day minimum. So if you weigh 100 pounds, you drink 50 ounces of water. If you weigh 200 pounds, you would drink 100 ounces of water. Now, caffeine dehydrates you, and there's lots of factors here, and that's not what this video is about, but do things to take care of your nutrition and your hydration. Now you need the air from the breathing to actually metabolize your food and to receive the water. You need to eat healthy, right? High nutrition, low calories. So lots of fruits and vegetables and food that agrees with your system in a healthy way, and making sure you're hydrated. Think of water like the oil for the engine in your car. If you don't have enough oil in the engine of your car, pretty soon it's gonna lock up on you. Then you don't wanna do that. You wanna have enough water so that your engine, your body, doesn't lock up on you. And then the next thing you do after this is you begin to really tell yourself the truth about your life, your state of affairs, and then where you wanna go. And say, okay, if this is where I am, where do I wanna be? And begin to map the road out. For those kinds of things, I always suggest having a trusted other person help you out. I personally have an amazing coach who helps me with my business and things like that, but he's more than that in a way because he understands and hears things in a different way. I also have an inner circle of friends and people I call whenever things are going on because everyone needs that. So we can't do it alone. We're not meant to. Our brains are meant to be connected to others of the same species. But also, it's important to have other people to give us perspective or help us see what we can't see or help us show what's in our blind spot. And so having a support group that is supportive of your process without their own agenda being in the way is extremely important. Because without your own awareness and your own honesty and authentic, real support, it's tricky to make long-term changes. Now, the good news is we can make changes. All humans have the ability to change. That phrase that you can't teach old dogs new tricks is not true. You can definitely teach old dogs new tricks. You can teach any dog tricks. So it's all about what your goal is and what your motivation is and what you would like to do. So there's lots of different ways to do it. There's also a way to focus on your mental, your emotional, your physical, your spiritual, and your social connections. So I work with all the visionaries I work with on all of their life areas so that we can have a balance and a harmony, more of an equilibrium than a two balanced scale, right? So your hierarchy of addiction is breathing. It's food, it's sexuality, and then it's substances outside of us. Cascading over that and around that is chemistry type addiction, like fear and pain and anger that happens as a result of our life, whatever's going on in our world. All of those are one big thing. So if somebody is trying to stop a food issue, like lose weight, or they're trying to stop a substance issue, or they're working on some other part of their life, all of these things have to be considered for the person to be successful in the long run, to have effective change. And the people I work with, I love to help them see the bigger picture so that they understand there's much more going on than what's on the surface or what meets the eyes. It makes much more sense this way. So have awareness, tell the truth, access unconditional support that will also have healthy boundaries to help show you the way. That's what I do with my people that I work with, and I love doing it because to see people smile for the first time after they've been confused or in pain brings me the greatest joy of all. So I hope this video has been helpful to you. And so we have our breathing and our food and our sexuality and all of the substances overarching with whatever our chemistry is doing, our brain chemistry of fear, pain, or anger. So there's solutions go from having awareness to then telling yourself the truth and then also seeking the right and perfect support, whether it's a mentor or a therapist or people in a 12-step program or somebody who can honestly support you with healthy boundaries without their own personal agenda getting in the way. Because if you have support where the person has an agenda, it's not really support. You want to find somebody who can really help guide you and support you in making the changes that you say you want to make. Because it's not easy. It's not easy at all. There's a lot of unconscious resistance that we all have to change. And hear me when I say unconscious. No one's doing it on purpose. Thank you for watching. I hope this episode really touched your heart. Be sure to subscribe to this channel, share it with your friends, and ring that bell so you too will know the next time I post another video. And in the meantime, be well. Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit SomeoneGetsMe.com. Again, thanks for listening.